When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's video, I am giving you 6 allegedly true camping and hiking horror stories. You be the judge. Now, let's get spooky. This story happened just this summer. I'm only now getting around to writing it down. I would consider myself an outdoorsman. I grew up in the sticks. I've spent a lot of my life wandering in and enjoying the backcountry. I'm older now and have settled down in the suburbs. Wife, 2 boys, a house, a dog, a desk job, the whole suburban schmuck. I want opportunities for my kids that come from suburban life, but I also want them to grow up with an appreciation for the outdoors. So when my oldest son was big enough for his first solo father-son camping trip, I was excited. My wife and younger son stayed home for this midsummer trip. It was going to be a great bonding experience for me and my son. Because my son is just 5, I didn't want to do anything too extreme on our first big solo camping trip. We needed a place that wasn't too deep into the Colorado Front Range, but still allowed for dispersed camping. I don't consider camping in RV parks or established campgrounds to be actual camping. You might as well be at a motel watching TV. Camping at most is a tent, sleeping bag, and a fire. A dispersed camping area called Gordon Gulch, west of Boulder, caught my attention. I had never been to this area before. There were no facilities in it, and dispersed enough you couldn't see or hear other campers nearby. My son and I had a blast that day. We set up camp, collected firewood, went for a hike, saw a moose and a bobcat, tried a little fishing, and finally, as the sunlight faded, we returned to our campsite to light a fire. We had a traditional and nutritious camping meal of fire-burnt hot dogs and marshmallows. It was a good day. Definitely a core memory for both my son and me. The perfect first camping experience for a preschooler. Or so I thought. After all that fun, my son and I were exhausted. It was time for bed. The sound of an evening summer breeze through the pines is better than any commercial sleep aid. I don't even remember drifting off. It was a hard, dreamless sleep that only physical exertion can bring. One thing about my son, he inherited many things from me: hair color, eye shape, disposition, and my unusually wide feet. But one peculiar thing he got from his mother was sleep talking. It's not unusual to hear him having a full conversation in his sleep. It gets more pronounced when he's overly tired. I was catapulted out of my void of sleep, not sure of what aroused me. I sat up, collecting myself. The world seemed to be at peace. It was quiet. Just me and the breeze through the treetops. I couldn't figure out what had woken me so suddenly. The sound of my son laughing in his sleep cut through my groggy confusion. It was a deep belly laugh. Must be a fun dream, I thought hazily. Gently rocking him was enough to quiet him down. That must have been what startled me, I determined. As I repositioned to fall back to sleep, my son bursted out laughing. I sighed and closed my eyes. He'll quiet down soon enough, I thought. He laughed again. This time his laugh was echoed by something outside our tent. I held my breath and listened, unsure of what I just heard. It wasn't an echo. There was something out there, and it was laughing in unison with my son. My grogginess vanished as the adrenaline began to pump. It couldn't be real. It had to be my imagination. I sat up in my sleeping bag listening to the night. Hearing nothing after a minute, my muscles relaxed. I started to settle back down. Must have been hearing things. I was tired after all. Checking the time, I saw that it was 4 a.m. The sun would be up in a couple hours. My son laughed again, and again it was answered with laughter outside. I was now absolutely certain it was not an echo. As I tried to make sense of what was happening, the voice outside called out my son's name. My blood ran cold. That voice. It was so familiar. Then it clicked in my brain. It was the voice of my younger son. That wasn't at all possible. He was safe at home with my wife, miles and miles away. I could hear twigs crunching beyond our thin nylon tent walls. It was impossible to tell the distance from us, but there was something out there, circling us. Unprompted this time, it called out my son's name in that little toddler voice. My 5-year-old, still fast asleep, called out to his brother, asking him to play. The thing outside the tent laughed in reply and urged my son to come outside. That thing with my little son's voice sounded cold, hollow, dead. The floodgates of my adrenaline burst open. Cold sweat formed on my face. I was frightened out of my mind, but my primal caveman brain roared to life. I was in Papa Bear mode. Nothing was going to take or hurt my son. I was putting a stop to this. Whatever it was out there, I don't care. You don't mess with my kids. Say what you will, but when you're camping miles from anything, it's not worth the risk of being unarmed. Wild animals, wild people, you have to be prepared. I almost always take a firearm with me when I'm camping. Pepper spray and bear bells are great, but nothing gets attention from a cautious threat faster than the sound of chambering around. I spoke loudly into the night that I had a gun and I was coming out. I hoped the fear in my voice was masked by the aggressiveness. The only reply was the breeze through the treetops. My son was still asleep. Kid's a hard sleeper. Another trait from his mom. My wife and I have joked that she could sleep through a tornado. Stepping out into the cold summer night, a gun in one hand and a flashlight in the other, I surveyed the campsite. The fire was down to embers. Our fishing gear was leaned against the pickup. The firewood was still neatly stacked. Nothing seemed out of place. Not wanting to stray far from the tent or my sleeping son, I sat down outside the entrance. I waited in the dark with the flashlight off. Not far into the trees, I heard a branch break. Then another snapped, this time closer. I stood up and flashed my light in the direction of the sound. Nothing was there. The voice called out, this time from beyond, and this time focused towards me. Daddy, Daddy! It was my youngest son's voice again, crying out for me from the dark forest. I threw the light beam in that direction. A pair of shimmering green eyes were illuminated by my flashlight. They were only 2 or so feet above the ground, the same height as a toddler. I took a small step towards it. I wanted to see more. I needed to see more. The eyes, unblinking, remained in place. Getting closer did not help reveal this thing. It seemed to absorb the light from my flashlight, almost devouring it. I couldn't make out its size or shape or color. It seemed to swallow.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Blow up all the light around it, save for its 2 shimmering green eyes. That thing laughed in its hollow toddler's voice, this time with malice and cruelty in it. The eyes never looked away from me, never blinking, focused only on me, like a predator before the pounce. Not wanting to give up any ground to a predator, I stepped forward again. It didn't move. Not knowing what to do, I screamed as loud as I could, trying desperately to shoo it away. The eyes shimmered. And as I started the back, the eyes shifted from green to amber. I watched as they began to rise up into the air. It was now apparent to me that this thing had been crouching and was now standing up. I could only watch in silent terror as the eyes finally stopped rising, nearly 10 feet off the ground. The night air erupted with a deep growl. I could feel the vibrations in my guts. I couldn't see a mouth, but I could hear teeth snapping and gnawing. My son in the tent behind me began to scream. That was the only time the eyes lost focus on me and shifted towards the screams of my kid. My only reaction was to fire my gun into the air. The eyes immediately vanished. My ears were ringing, but I could hear the growls turn to shrieks, followed by a cacophony of crashing branches and undergrowth. I stood there until I couldn't hear the shrieking anymore. It trailed off deep into the trees. I was left with only the sound of the breeze and the treetops and the quiet sobbing of my child. Twilight was beginning to illuminate the forest. Shaking and exhausted, I sat down in the dirt in front of the tent. I tried to collect myself. "Daddy, Daddy, where are you?" my 5-year-old shouted. That got me out of my daze. I picked myself up and went into the tent to retrieve him. Putting him in the truck, I locked the doors and wasted little time breaking down camp. We were out of that camp and back on the road by the time the sun broke over the horizon. I have no idea what is in those woods. I do plan to camp in that area again, albeit without my family, and definitely with some friends. I want to find out more about this thing. Thankfully, my son doesn't seem fazed by anything that happened that night. He thinks I was chasing a bear away from camp, and maybe he's right. I hope he is, anyways. My son can't wait to go on another camping trip, but truthfully, I'm thinking the next family camping trip might be at an RV park, or even a motel. That's family camping, right? It was the summer of 2005. A friend of mine, Wayne, and I decided to spend the day fishing at Upper Swagger Lake in the Lost River mountain range of Idaho. Visited mostly by the locals, this alpine lake is stuck up on a ridge overseen two long, dry canyons on opposite sides. It sits just at the top of the tree line, providing an uninhibited view of the sky and surrounding mountain peaks. The fishing is usually pretty good, if you like golden trout. I hate trout. They taste like mud. But I do love fishing. And some of the best, most secluded lake fishing can be found on these high Idaho lakes. Getting to Swagger Lake is not an easy task. It's a 100-mile journey over a lonely highway from the region's largest town, Idaho Falls. When you hit the dirt road turnoff, there are miles of four-wheel driving up the canyon to the hiking trail. Once at the trailhead, it's a 2-mile, 1,000-foot vertical gain hike up to the lake. But when you finally arrive, surrounded by the bald peaks of the Little Lost Range, it's all worth the effort. Arriving at the lake around noon, we spent the day fishing, relaxing, and chatting. Far down in the canyon, out of sight from us, we continually heard periodic loud blasts. Growing up in the rural U.S., you get accustomed to people target shooting on public land. And that's what we concluded what was happening below us. From the sheer thunderousness, we guessed it was a large caliber muzzle-loading rifle. The blasts were spaced out long enough that they had to be manually reloading their guns. The shots reverberated and echoed throughout the canyon. Whoever was down there was having a bit of fun with their rifle. Unperturbed by the cacophony down in the canyon, we continued fishing, only momentarily reminded by the explosions as they continued to occur throughout the day. The fishing was great, and the days seemed to flash by. Before we knew it, the sun was cresting on the mountains. We headed back to camp for the night. Wayne had caught his limit towards the end of the day, while I had been releasing mine. We settled down to a campfire and watched the sun sink behind the mountain peaks as Wayne cooked his muddy fish. It was twilight now. Aside from the crackling of the fire, it was a quiet evening. The sky was absolutely clear, and we watched as the stars twinkled into existence in the sky. Our relaxation was interrupted by yet another one of those thunderous explosions. Only this time, it was much closer. That was weird. Target shooting is extremely dangerous at night. Whoever was down there in the canyon was being very irresponsible. Wayne nudged me with his elbow and motioned for me to look in the direction of the sound of the last explosion. While not directly visible to us, there was a light down the mountain. It was illuminating the whole canyon. From the angles of the tree shadows, we could see that the source of the light was not at ground level. It was high up in the air and it was moving. We watched in bewildered silence as the light moved up the canyon. We still could not get a direct line of sight of it. There was another blast that seemed to shake my skull. The light in the canyon flashed almost 100 times brighter than before. We could absolutely not make any sense of what was happening. As we sat there, unsure of what to do, the light rose upwards out of the canyon. As it crested the trees and continued to rise, we could finally get a direct look. It was a brilliant ball of yellow golden light. Getting a size estimate was difficult, but I figured it was between 20 to 40 feet in diameter. The light rose silently above the canyon and above our elevation at the lake. It stopped several hundred feet above the surrounding landscape and stayed there. The object's surfaces shimmered and danced. Little feathers of sparks would periodically jump away from the object and fall down towards the trees below. Wayne looked at me, and all I could do was shrug my shoulders and give him an "I have no damn idea" look. After a few minutes, the ball's surface stopped dancing. It was completely still in the air above us. No sound. No movement. With no warning, it exploded into a deafening shower of sparks and blinding light. Wayne and I instinctively jumped into the dirt and covered our heads. The light was so bright I felt I could see through my closed eyelids. The explosion shook everything around us. I could feel the shock resonate in the ground beneath me. It was like the world was coming undone at the seams. Then everything was absolutely silent and dark. The whole event could have only been a handful of seconds long, but it felt like hours. When we looked up into the sky, the ball of light was gone. We were left alone in just the dim light of the stars. Picking myself up off the dirt, all I could say to Wayne was,
"If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done."
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
"What the hell was all that about?" He chuckled nervously, but didn't reply. We surveyed the camp and the surrounding area. Nothing seemed damaged or disturbed. There was no sign of fires that were started from the explosion. It was like nothing out of the ordinary had happened. The one thing that was off, though, was the time. It was late twilight when the light exploded above us, but my watch was showing 2 o'clock in the morning. Further baffling us was Wayne's fish. They were now charred cinders above a bed of red coals that were once our campfire. I'm well aware of the phenomenon of missing time, but that is just not possible. The stupid thing exploded. We hit the dirt, and then we picked ourselves up. Couldn't have been more than a couple of minutes from the explosion to us getting up. I didn't have the mental capacity to process what had happened. I headed to my tent and went right to sleep. It was a deep, dreamless sleep. When I awoke, the morning sun was illuminating the tent. Wayne was already up and fishing. I asked him about his thoughts on what had happened last night, and he simply shrugged and said, "It either didn't happen or we saw something we probably shouldn't have. It's that or Marvin the Martian tried to kill us." We fished for a few hours that morning, then decided against camping another night at that lake. We packed up camp and hiked down to our vehicle. This happened almost 20 years ago, and I've been back to Swager Lake several times over the years. I've never seen or heard anything like what we saw on that night again. I don't have an explanation for what happened, and don't believe we ever will. In many rural areas of the American West, cutting firewood in national forests is a necessary chore if you want a warm house through the winter. Our home in mountainous central Idaho was no exception. It was normal for my dad to pick me and my brothers up after school and head into the mountains for an afternoon of firewood gathering. My dad would fell the dead trees, then saw them into chunks. My brother and I had the task of rolling the wood to the truck and loading it. He would continue this assembly line process until we had a truckload of wood, usually before nightfall. Hot, sweaty, and exhausted, we would pile into the truck cab and make our way down the mountain. At home the next day, we would unload the split wood and stack it neatly into little rows. This process was repeated until we had a winter's worth of fuel for our house, our grandma's cabin, and any extra for elderly neighbors. This particular afternoon, we decided to try a different logging road on the other side of the valley. This was well outside our familiar logging area. No real reason for the change, but my dad said he wanted the change of scenery. This logging road hadn't been maintained in some time. Large rocks and fallen branches littered the path. My brothers and I had to walk in front, pushing rocks and wood out of the way as my dad lurched the truck up the switchbacks. Yard by yard, we slowly made our way up the mountain. That hike was physically brutal. As we ascended the mountain and got further into the trees, this odd feeling started to set in. I wasn't sure if it was the exhaustion from the hike or something more. There was electricity in the air, like the whole mountain was buzzing at the wavelength just beyond my senses. In some odd way, it felt like the mountain knew we were there, and it wasn't welcome to that fact. I wanted to say something to my brothers, but before I opened my mouth, my younger brother said, "Does anyone else feel like we're not welcome here?" My older brother and I stopped in our tracks and I looked back at him. Both of us nodded in agreement. This moment was broken by my dad honking and motioning us to continue clearing the path. Reluctantly, we pushed forward to a small clearing in the woods where we finally stopped the truck. My dad, oblivious to our apprehension, or simply choosing to ignore it, grabbed a saw and went to work. As the wood was felled and loaded, I couldn't shake the ominous feeling enveloping me like a dark shroud. I noticed my brothers were taking occasional glances over their shoulders as we worked. Everyone, but my dad, it seemed, was on edge. The sun nestled down into the trees and twilight began to set in. As the light drained from the sky, my anxiety only intensified. It wasn't until my dad unexpectedly told us to load up that a wave of relief flooded over me. I could see the tension in my brothers melt away as well. The truck wasn't fully loaded, an oddity. Getting a half load was a waste, according to my dad. We would sometimes work into the night just to make sure the truck was full. But tonight, he seemed eager to head home. With everything loaded, we started down the road. Although dead tired, everyone seemed to be in a much lighter mood. We were chatting and cracking jokes while trying to blow off steam from the afternoon. We were almost out of the tree line and into the valley desert. Going down the switchbacks, you want to be careful, especially with a load, even if it was half that. A brown blur jumped up from the downslope side of the switchback.
"Shoot!"
was the only word that came out of my dad's mouth as he slammed on the brakes. Loaded with wood and traveling downhill, there is no way to avoid smashing into the blur. The truck finally ground to a standstill. The four of us peered through the windshield. Nobody's saying a word. Illuminated in the yellow glow of our headlights was a crumpled body of a deer. Grumbling and cursing the deer's existence, my dad exited the truck to investigate. Doing as they were told, my brothers stayed put in the truck. I didn't listen, following close behind my dad. The truck was fine. We hadn't been traveling fast when we smacked the deer. Just some hair and blood in the grill guard. Hitting a deer really wasn't that unusual. The mountains were full of them. What was unusual was that the deer dropped so quickly. At faster speeds, deer could still be upright and sprinting away to die in the woods after a collision. The last burst of the adrenaline dump. This one fell over like a rag doll. Before even approaching the carcass, a deep, foul smell hit us. Deer smell bad when they're alive, but this was on a whole nother level. It was a smell of decay and rot. My stomach began to turn as we got closer. My nostrils were burning. Coming up on the deer, it was clearly dead. Really, really dead. The stench was so overwhelming, my eyes were watering. The body was a true horror scene. The deer's eyes were gone, replaced with sunken hollow holes. As if to overcompensate for their absence, the tongue was swollen and black as coal. It could not be contained and hung out the side of its mouth. The underbelly was split open. Entrails spilled out into the dirt. In the dim headlights, it looked as though the deer's fur and viscera were moving, wiggling almost. Holding my breath, I bent down for a closer look and my heart stopped. The deer, inside and out, was covered in maggots. It was dead all right, but our truck didn't kill it. Clearly it had been dead for days, if not weeks. I backed away, wrenching. That electrical anxiety came screaming back. My dad was always the quiet stoic type, but right now, even in the dim headlights of the truck, I could see the abject horror in his face. His gaze wasn't on the deer, but focused down the mountain. Poorly masking the fear in his voice, he told me firmly to walk back to the truck and get inside. I obeyed without objection. As I grabbed the door handle, a loud shriek came out of the trees. Branches were shattering and breaking.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Something was heading up the slope towards us. I slammed my door closed just as my dad reached the truck. Before his door was shut, he pressed on the accelerator. The truck launched forward, sending us over the deer carcass and racing downhill. With me and my brothers yelling, it was hard to tell if the shrieking was following us. Our truck popped out of the tree line and into the desert sagebrush. One side of the woods, everything quieted down. We were left with only the rumble of the engine and wind through the half-opened windows. Pulling into our property, the truck came to a stop. We sat in silence. No one moved to leave the truck. Everyone started talking at once. We all had questions. What was that screaming? How does a dead deer jump uphill in front of a truck? There was no way the truck killed it. Dad just shook his head and motioned for us to quiet down. That deer was dead when we hit it. It didn't jump out from us. It was thrown at us. We stared at him. He explained that all day up in the mountain, he felt uneasy. Not wanting to worry us boys, he kept it to himself. He described it like walking into a stranger's living room while they were upstairs asleep. That feeling never left him, and as twilight came, he happened to catch a shadow in the corner of his eye, not far into the woods, and saw figures moving from tree to tree. He couldn't focus on them long enough for a good look before they dodged behind trees. His stomach dropped. Working hard to keep his composure, he hurried us back to the truck to leave. It was after hitting the deer and discovering it was long dead that my dad pieced together what was happening. Something threw that deer to get us to stop. Before the shrieking began, he could hear something moving in the darkness beyond the road. It was a trap. Running back to the truck could have started an ambush or triggered a prey drive. So we walked back to the truck. The second we were inside, he drove that truck downhill with no intention of stopping for anyone or anything. That feeling of electricity didn't disappear until we hit the county highway. My brothers and I never saw anything as we drove away, but those screams from the forest will never leave my mind. We didn't gather firewood the rest of the season. For the first time in his life, my dad just bought what was needed. And although we started to gather wood again the next season, we never went back up that particular mountain. The Forest Service has permanently closed and reclaimed that road. The only way up into those woods is a long hike, one I'm not interested in ever taking again. Whatever was on that mountain, whatever threw that deer carcass, whatever chased us out of the woods, it did not want us there. It wanted us gone, or worse, it wanted us dead. This story, unfortunately, is true. I've changed names and ages slightly for privacy. I grew up in the Sierra Nevadas. It's a really beautiful part of the world with sprawling pines, rugged mountains, and crystalline lakes. I wasn't big on camping, but I had spent a good chunk of my childhood weekends hiking with family and friends, and spent many summer days tubing on the lake. The summer that I was 16, about 10 years ago now, my cousin Celia had come back from her first year of college, and her boyfriend Jay was visiting to meet her family and friends. Jay, like most tourists, wanted to go on a hike with lake views. Celia and I decided to take him on one of our favorites, a moderate hike through the woods on a gentle incline that peaks at hollow in the trees overlooking Lake Tahoe below. Jay had some hiking experience, albeit in less rugged terrain, and we thought this hike would be a fun challenge with the spectacular views he wanted. It is an in-and-out trail that takes about 2 to 3 hours to the top and 2 to 3 hours back down. There are some smaller trails that branch off and offer steeper inclines or winding paths down towards the lake. The three of us set off on the hike on the first Saturday of his visit. The trail isn't the easiest to find, but it's really popular with locals because of the view and general lack of tourists. It was mislabeled on the most popular trails website at the time, so it was hard to find if you didn't know where to look. We passed only a couple of other hikers, mostly granola-type couples with Camelback water backpacks hiking with their dogs. We made it to the top in good time and enjoyed our lunches overlooking the lake. Jay was appropriately impressed by the views and spent a lot of time taking pictures. In between selfies and bites of sandwiches, we mostly just relaxed and got to know each other. After about an hour of relaxing, we heard a scream in the distance. Specifically, a mountain lion scream. If you've never heard a mountain lion scream, it's really unnerving. It sounds a bit like a very loud, terrified woman letting out a blood-curdling shriek of terror. YouTube it. It's truly a horrible sound. This was not good, because when a mountain lion screams, it's either part of a mating ritual or two male lions are fighting. Either way, hearing one scream meant there was multiple mountain lions and close. The bears in the Sierras are softies, but the mountain lions will attack you. They'll attack your pets. They've even been known to attack bikers. There's safety in numbers, but even three is risky if you're talking about a hungry lion. Jay was really freaked out. There weren't big predators roaming around from where he's from, and the thought of an animal large and willing enough to eat him was off-putting. Cilia and I were wary but not alarmed. Between the natural disasters that frequently occurred in this region, earthquakes, wildfires, mega blizzards, and the sometimes deadly wild animals that got close to town, we were fairly unshakable. We had seen plenty of bears and snakes on hikes, and sometimes encountering critters is the price you pay to enjoy the natural beauty. It also wasn't the first time we had heard mountain lions, and we had both seen them before, albeit mostly from the safety of a cabin or a house. There was also an incident where, as kids, we laid out some expensive steak in my backyard in the hopes of luring a mountain lion to take pictures of it. It did not work, and my mother was unhappy about the steaks. Anyways, Celia and I told Jay that it was fine, but we needed to pack up and get back down the mountain. We packed up our leftovers of our lunches and took off at the brisk pace back down the mountain. About 40 minutes into the hike back, Jay realized that he had forgotten his phone at the lookout in his rush or leave. Of course. After a brief back and forth between Jay and Celia, I don't need it back that badly. Jay, it has all the pictures from your spring break trip, not to mention you're a broke college student. Yes, you need it back. We decided to go back and get it. Well, we decided that Celia and Jay would hike back up to retrieve his phone, and I would stay there on the trail alone to warn off any other potential hikers that there are mountain lions in the area. I was mostly worried about those hikers with their off-leash dogs and wanted to prevent a wandering lab from getting mauled. This was obviously not ideal for any of us, but seemed like the best choice at the time. I found a nice rock to sit on in the shade just off the trail and was going through the pictures we took on my phone in plain Temple Run. There was no cell service or internet, but I knew they'd be back soon. Celia and Jay had been gone for about 50 minutes when I heard the scream again. And it was hard to tell, but I thought it was closer than before. I started to get pretty nervous. Being in groups is far preferable when dealing with mountain lions, and I felt like perfect bait sitting there alone in the woods. About 20 minutes after that, I heard the scream again, and there was no doubt it was closer. It sounded like it was coming from up the trail, towards where Celia and Jay were coming down. Very soon, I sincerely hoped. Logically, I knew that lions don't scream when hunting. They are quiet. If a mountain lion was hunting me, I wouldn't even know it. The screaming meant it was doing something else. Something not feeding related.
That knowledge did not make me less nervous. I became hyper-alert, whipping my head around every time I heard a noise or thought I saw a flash of movement. I turned my flashlight on, even though it was the middle of the day. I got up out of my rock to stand in the middle of the trail to have visibility up, down, and in the trees on Tien's side of the trail. A couple minutes after that, I heard it again, extremely close by. By this point, I had full goosebumps and a pit in my stomach, a complete sense of dread. I looked around and tried to find the best place for me to stand, back covered in case of the worst. I decided to wedge myself up against a tree next to the rock that I had been sitting on. I had good visibility up and down the trail still, and into the trees across the trail. I continued scanning around, focusing on the trail where I thought the screams were coming from. Suddenly, I saw something. Standing still, 20 feet up the trail, a couple feet off of it, was a man. He was completely naked. He was filthy. He was skinny. And he was just standing there, looking at me. I didn't even hear him come up. It sounds cliche, but it really was like he appeared out of nowhere, especially since I'd been focusing on looking for the lion in that direction. If you don't know where you're going, it's easy to get lost in the woods around there. The weather can change quickly, and people panic and get more lost in their attempts to find their cars. And it doesn't take long, being alone, lacking food and water in the wilderness, to make people a little disoriented. A little crazy. The infamous Donner Party incident happened maybe an hour away from where I was standing. My first thought is that this man was probably a lost hiker, and judging by how dirty he was, he had been lost a long time. He needed help. I had heard about people with hyperthermia stripping off all of their clothing, and thought maybe that was what happened. Now, this took place during the summer, and there's no way that someone would get hyperthermia in July, so that didn't occur to me until later. I started walking towards him, asking if he was okay. I suddenly got this feeling of wrongness. I don't know how else to describe it, but my feeling of dread tripled. The hair stood up on my neck. I stopped in my tracks, maybe 15 feet away now, and had the overwhelming urge to run away. It seemed wrong. It felt wrong. He looked wrong in a way I can't quite articulate. Instead of wanting to help him, I was absolutely terrified of him. I asked again if he was okay. He looked at me, then opened his mouth wide and screamed. Not a normal scream. He screamed just like a mountain lion. A high-pitched, keening shriek that made my blood run cold. It occurred to me that we were probably hearing him the whole time. It was the single most terrifying thing I had ever witnessed. I started screaming too. I was preparing to run away down the trail, I suppose, but also really not wanting to turn my back on him. Suddenly, he closed his mouth, turned around, and ran into the woods very quickly. He disappeared into the trees, but the feeling of wrongness was still with me. I felt like I was going to throw up. I considered bolting down the trail to get away, but decided to wait for Celia and Jay, who luckily arrived within 10 or 15 minutes. I told them what happened, and we decided to call in to the Rangers when we got service. Celia and I had seen some odd things in our lives, her more than me, but she turned white as a sheet when I told her what happened. I guess they didn't hear anything at all on the way down. I've always been deeply unsettled since the incident. Did I see a mentally ill lost hiker who really needed my help? Or did I see something else? Celia insists that it was a skinwalker or something similar, something malevolent and inhuman, mimicking the call of a mountain lion and stalking us down the mountain. So I've been sitting on this experience for a while. I guess, just not wanting to make a big deal out of nothing. But after some reading of the stories here and on other related subs, I would really like an answer to what I experienced. Back in about March of this year, I went camping with a friend, my boyfriend, and three dogs. My friend slept in his tent with his dog, and I slept in my tent with my two dogs and my boyfriend. My friend's tent was about 30 feet away from ours, and we were camping in the North Georgia mountains off an old Forest Service road. We were right next to a creek. For context, I'm an experienced backpacker and am familiar with the usual nighttime sounds like rustling in the leaves, sticks breaking, cicadas, etc. I have a lot of experience camping by myself, so it's rare that I get spooked out by anything other than other humans nearby, as I'm aware of the dangers of traveling solo as a woman. However, this particular night, I woke up in the middle of the night with a sense of absolute dread I've never felt before. I checked my phone and it read about 3:30, 4 o'clock a.m. I really had to use the bathroom and was debating on whether I wanted to try to put my hiking boots on and venture outside to go or just try to hold it in until daylight. I didn't want to wake up the dogs because if they heard me putting on my boots, they'd likely want to go outside to go to the bathroom as well. Still in the tent, that's when I noticed it. It's almost like a hum, but not in the pleasant way when it's a tone or anything like that. It's a low-pitched hum that was reverberating throughout the campsite forest area and through my body. It had two tones. It started with a relatively higher pitch and would switch to a relatively lower pitch after a period of time. Then it would start all over without a break in the sound at all. It wasn't soft either. It felt like it was covering the entire wooded area we were in. It didn't sound like an animal, a person, a machine, or anything that I've ever heard. At this point, I absolutely cannot hold off a bathroom trip any longer. I quickly put on my hiking boots and quietly tell the dogs to stay put. My boyfriend is still sleeping. I unzip the tent and go outside, and the entire campsite was covered in this spooky-ass fog, but it felt like it was my vision that was foggy, not the actual air. I couldn't see a dang thing. The two-tone humming then got louder. I do my business maybe 5 feet away from the tent. Sorry, but there's no way I'm going to go venturing any farther than that. And quickly nope the hell back into the tent and bury myself into my sleeping bag with a sweatshirt over my head to try to drown out or ignore the humming. The dogs raised their heads and growled a few times throughout this experience, but that isn't unusual for them when camping. I never saw any figures or lights in the woods, but I also was not looking for them and was trying to ignore the entire experience. Does anyone know what this humming could have been? New to the group, so I wanted to share an experience I had back in the spring of 2018. I have had a few what could be considered paranormal experiences in my life, but this was the most recent and unnerving. I am an avid outdoorsman and love to hunt and camp around the Francis Marion and Sumter National Forest. Back in 2018, I took my young son and dog out to a remote area in the National Forest to test out a new camper shell on my recently purchased truck. We found a secluded area off a dirt road, made dinner, and then packed it in for the night as soon as it got dark. Around 11 p.m. at night, I sat up and looked out the back of the truck due to my dog growling. In the distance, I saw what looked like hundreds of small white balls of light darting around, then hovering for a few seconds and slowly converging to our campsite. They look just like dust orbs you see on videos. But these were producing light in a completely dark forest. They soon surrounded my truck. Seemed like hundreds of them. They were a soft white light, and they didn't blink. Lightning bugs were out early evening, but they were yellow and blinking. After 30 minutes of them floating around and concentrating around us, I finally broke up the nerve to open the truck and lit a lantern, and they promptly disappeared. After turning off the lights and locking back up, they came back. My son was fast asleep, thank goodness. I watched them until I finally fell asleep around 1 a.m. The next morning, when we tried to leave, the battery was dead on the new truck. There wasn't any lights in the back cab where we would have used any power. A week later, I had to replace the electrical control module. Not sure if that is relevant info, but thought I would add it. Has anyone had a similar experience? Just thinking about them makes my hair stand up on my neck.